As Iyanla Van Zandt once said, it's important that we share our experiences with other people. Your story will heal you, and your story will heal somebody else. At Project Sleep, we believe that your stories matter, which is why we train people with sleep disorders on how to share their stories through our Rising Voices program. This Rising Voices podcast series features a variety of firsthand stories from people living with sleep disorders around the world. Each person's story offers unique and important insights.
Welcome to Project Sleep's podcast. Project Sleep is a 501c3 nonprofit organization dedicated to raising awareness and advocating for sleep health, sleep equity, and sleep disorders. I'm your host, Julie Flygar. We're so glad you're here as we work together towards making sleep cool. On this podcast, all guests express their own opinions. While medical diagnoses and treatment options are discussed for educational purposes, this information should not be taken as medical advice. Each person's experience is so unique, which is why it's so important to always consult your own medical team when making decisions about your own health. If you haven't done so yet, please hit the subscribe button so you never miss a Project Sleep podcast episode. And if you enjoy this podcast, please leave us a rating or review wherever you listen so that we can reach more listeners and raise more awareness. Hello. Welcome, everybody. And we have a very special guest with us tonight, Stephanie. Hi, Stephanie.
Hey, Julie. Hey, everybody.
So Stephanie Manuli is an undergraduate student at North Carolina State University, where she is studying biochemistry. Stephanie was diagnosed with narcolepsy in 2014 and is now a trained speaker with Project Sleep's Rising Voices of Narcolepsy Leadership Program. In her presentation, Stephanie will share her story of this misunderstood condition with the goal of raising awareness. And a special treat, I think, for young people that are looking to start college or parents that are thinking about their daughter or son going off to college. I'm really excited to hear Stephanie's perspective on all that. So take it away, Stephanie.
Thank you, Julie. So hi, everybody. My name is Stephanie. I'm really excited to share a little bit about my story with you guys today. I grew up in a super small town on the coast of North Carolina. I was really happy and outgoing. I made friends with everybody I met, and I absolutely loved to dance. I started it at the age of 3, and I never stopped. I have one younger brother. He's 1 year younger than I am. And we fought a ton, but it was really nice having someone to play with all the time. And my dad was actually a physician, so that really sparked my interest in science and medicine. There was one time where I cut my toe and I needed stitches, so he just took me to his office and did stitches when I was 4, and I would get mad when he wouldn't let me see. So it definitely started at an early age. So things started to change when I was about 8 years old. I really started to struggle to fall asleep at night. I loved to sleep, so that was really bizarre for me. I was the best nap taker as a toddler. So it was really weird. And when I would lay in bed just struggling to fall asleep, I would try to find things to do. So I would clean my room or do something else. And one night I decided to paint my toenails this blue color. And I started painting my toenails, and then I accidentally kicked the blue nail polish over onto my carpet. And I was like, oh yeah, the carpet was white. And I was like, oh no, what do I do? So I go to my mom's room and I'm like crying and I'm like, Mom, please. And so we go to my room and we're angrily scrubbing out this blue stain. And that's when it all started. So in addition to having a hard time falling asleep, I was also having a really hard time staying awake during the day. And I started complaining to my parents about it. And I was like, man, I'm so tired. And they thought I was saying that just to get out of doing chores. And they're like, stop complaining. You're being lazy. And it was really hard to hear that all the time, because eventually I began to believe it myself. Something else that happened started happening around this age was I started seeing people in my room. One that was very regular was seeing a shadow person in the corner of my room where my coats would hang. And I would tell myself, it's just your imagination, it's just your coats. But I definitely knew it was not just my coats. But that was how I could get through it as a little kid. One incident that was fortunately isolated, but really scary, was I was laying in bed and my bed's next to a window. And there were these people like looking into my window, and it was really scary. And as they noticed that I got scared, they started laughing at me. Like that was their goal. And it was so scary. I remember it vividly to this day. And so with all of these weird things going on and being really tired all the time, my bubbly personality started to change. I couldn't have the ability to like socialize and be that bubbly person and make friends like I used to. And that was honestly really depressing. So then eventually my parents noticed this. I never told them about anything else that was going on because I thought that was normal. As a child, you thought that your imagination is just running wild. So that's what I thought it was. But they knew something was off. And so at age 10, they were like, let's just take her to a psychiatrist. Let's see if we can figure this out. And I remember sitting in the doctor's office on the carpet, drawing a picture of my family. I feel like every psychiatrist asks a kid to do that. So sat on the carpet, drawing a picture of my family. And then it was time to go. And I remember asking my mom, so did they figure it out? And she said no. And she sounded really defeated. And I couldn't understand why. I was like, isn't that a good thing? But I didn't understand. She was hoping for answers, but she got more questions than answers. So then at about age 12, my dad, as a physician, sees an opportunity to become a sleep doctor. Being from a small town, there's a huge opportunity there. There are very few sleep doctors even near us. So that could have been a really big help to the community. So he decided to start studying to take the sleep medicine boards. And a lot of sleep medicine is sleep apnea. So he thought to himself, you know what? It's sleep apnea. Let's do an at-home sleep study. So at age 12, I do an at-home sleep apnea test. And that comes back negative too. And we're like, oh, well. And kind of goes on the back burner again until age 14, when my dad is driving me home from school one day, which he didn't really do. And the car ride home is about 10 minutes. It's nothing crazy. And 2 minutes into the car ride, he looks back and I'm fast asleep because I've been fighting sleep all day long. Once I get into the car, nap time. So he looked back and he thought to himself, that's what a person with narcolepsy would do. And it really clicked for him right there. And so the next day, my mom made an appointment for me for a pediatric neurologist who did a lot of work in sleep disorders. And so that's when it all kind of started. My first appointment, he was asking me, so you are having a really hard time sleeping. Okay, are you tired or are you sleepy? And I thought about it. I was like, you know, I'm sleepy. It's not that I'm worn out. I'm just sleepy. And he kind of got excited a little bit. And he said, okay, well, do you feel weak when you find something really funny or when you get really mad? And I'm like, no, I don't think so. But he kept pushing and he asked, okay, do you sometimes see people in your room when you're trying to fall asleep? And I'm like, yeah. And my mom is shocked because she's never heard about any of this before. And the more questions he asks, he gets more and more excited. And he tells me, it's not official, but there's a 99% chance that you have narcolepsy. And I'm like, what is narcolepsy? Narcolepsy, as I come to learn, is a chronic neurological sleep disorder of the sleep-wake cycle. It affects about every 1 in 2,000 people and about 3 million people worldwide. There are 5 symptoms of narcolepsy. There's excessive daytime sleepiness, which is what I was experiencing when I fell asleep in the car. I would fight sleep all day long. And then the second I got home from school, I didn't have to fight it anymore. So that was a big relief for me and a good break. And it's compared to what a normal person would feel like if they were to stay awake for about 2 to 3 days. There's also cataplexy, which I do not have, but it was what the doctor was asking me about, where you have loss of muscle tone with extreme emotions, such as laughter or anger or fright, stuff like that. And the severity can range from just like a slackening in the jaw to like completely falling down. And they can even adjust in size or length. And so they could last for like a few seconds to even several minutes. And the person is fully conscious during that episode. Another symptom of narcolepsy is hypnagogic and hypnopompic hallucinations, which is what I was experiencing when I saw those people in my room. And they're auditory, visual, and tactile hallucinations. They can often be paired with sleep paralysis, which is the inability to move while awake. And this happens when you're waking up or falling asleep, and the paralysis during REM, so you don't act out your dreams, that kind of blends into the waking world. So you're awake, but your body thinks you're asleep. So it paralyzes you, so you don't act out your dreams. And it can be really scary. The last symptom is disrupted nighttime sleep, which I am all too familiar with, and that blue stain is still there. So yeah, that's a good reminder. There are 2 types of narcolepsy. There's narcolepsy with cataplexy and narcolepsy without cataplexy, which is what I have. They're more recently referred to type 1 and type 2. Narcolepsy with cataplexy is a lack of hypocretin in the brain, as recent research says. But less is known about narcolepsy without cataplexy, so hopefully we can change that. For a diagnosis, most people get a sleep test done. There's a nighttime portion and a daytime portion. The nighttime portion, you sleep through the night and you've got all these like electrodes on you, like in the picture, and they measure your sleep waves while you sleep. So there's the nighttime portion. And then there's a daytime portion, which is a multiple sleep latency test, which is a series of naps, which was so annoying to take. As a person who loved to sleep, you would fall asleep and then they'd wake you up 20 minutes later. It's like, really? And then you'd have to stay awake for a whole hour and then you could take a nap again, but only for 20 minutes. And it was so exhausting. I was so ready to leave when it was all done. And a really funny story about getting diagnosed was I was in a children's hospital for my sleep test, and I was covered with electrodes, and they let us go to the cafeteria to get food for lunch. And so my mom and I get on the elevator. I'm covered in electrodes. I've got this little box around my neck, and this little girl and her mom get on the elevator with us. And the little girl is so scared, and she's like, "Mommy, what's wrong with her?" And it was just kind of funny because nothing was wrong with me, really. I just had all these crazy things all over my head and I looked really funny and scary. So that was something my mom and I laughed at in the moment. So there is no cure for narcolepsy yet, unfortunately, but there are several treatment options that are available that can help mitigate the symptoms. One such medication are wake promoters, or stimulants that are used during the day, which can help people stay alert and focused during the day and not feel as sleepy and able to get work done and be productive. There's also nighttime medications for nighttime sleep. So they kind of helped me sleep throughout the night and get like a full restful sleep, where rather than every 3 hours I'm waking up, I actually get a full night's sleep, which is amazing. Also, antidepressants can be used to help with cataplexy. Also, scheduled daytime naps can help. Like my cat will tell you, she always reminds me to take a nap. So that's always helpful, and having a nice little nap buddy. So what is life like with narcolepsy? This diagnosis was really weird to get as a 14-year-old, as a teenager in middle school. I didn't really know what it was. And to me, as a teenager, it was felt like it was comparable to diabetes or a cancer diagnosis. And it was really scary. And I begged my mom to stay home after the doctor told me I might have narcolepsy. And she said, nope, you got to go to school. And I felt like I couldn't tell my friends because I didn't know how to explain it to them because I didn't know about it myself. So how am I going to explain it to my friends? So that was really tough at first to deal with. But eventually I did some research. I talked to my dad about it. And I got more comfortable with the idea. And then after the summer, right before my high school year started, I started medications. I started taking the nighttime medication so I could sleep through the night. And then eventually started taking stimulants as well during the day. And that was life-changing. I went from being able to not be able to do my homework at night because I was so tired from fighting sleep all day, to where I could do extra credit now, and I completed all my homeworks, and I was making all A's in my classes, which I had never done before. And I actually felt like I could participate in class and participate in my friendships and participate in dance again. And it really just brought me back to life. And so that was just, it felt like all of the doors had opened back up again, and I was living this whole new life. Kind of like Ariel when she gets her, like she can walk, except she has her voice too. So that was really cool. Something that really helped with the medications, actually have quite weird symptoms to get used to. So accommodations at school were very helpful and essential. So I got a little bit of extra time to complete assignments, nothing crazy, like 1 or 2 days to complete an assignment, or I was allowed to go sleep in the nurse's office if I needed to, and I could have extra time on tests if I needed to. So that was comforting for me, and especially my mom. And that October, the year I got diagnosed, my mom and I went to Colorado for my first narcolepsy convention. And that was game changing for me because I had never met someone else with narcolepsy before. And seeing people who were like me, and I'm like, hey, they're living their best life, I can too. It was really powerful for me to see that and kind of learn all these tips and tricks of how to navigate this new world I was living in. That's kind of where my life with advocacy started. I saw this great community, this great new world, and I was like, hey, I want to be a part of this. This is pretty cool. I began to get involved. When I was 15, I became a youth ambassador with the Narcolepsy Network program, and that was really cool. They actually invited me back a second year to help train the new youth ambassadors, which was really awesome to see how big the program grew and how many young people there were like me who also had narcolepsy and who wanted to speak up about it. It was really awesome to see. And also on this journey, I discovered like, hey, I like medicine. I like science. I like research. There's a lack of research in this community. Why not put them together and have that be my career? So I kind of figured out what I wanted to do early on, which was really cool. I feel bad because all of my friends are in college still kind of trying to figure out what they want to do. And I've known for several years. So I feel kind of bad about it. But, you know, when you know, you know. So that was really cool. And I just had this newfound sense of confidence that I could do anything I wanted with my life. And I wanted to share that with others if I could. And so, yeah, that was really, really awesome and moving. So what's in store for the future? I am, as Julie mentioned, a junior at NC State. It's come with its own set of challenges, but it's surprisingly been easy to navigate. Coming to college, we had a lot of worries with the medications and that kind of thing. Fortunately, my school is very accommodating. I have accommodations. I had a private room, so I didn't have to worry about like the medicines or anything. And we always let several people on my floor or any friends that lived in my building know about my situation. So if the fire alarm went off in the middle of the night, stuff like that, I would be looked after and someone would come check on me. Fortunately, that's only happened once. And my friend lived right next door and she ran into my room and shook me awake as hard as she could and ripped my covers off and said, "Stephanie, the fire alarm is going off. Let's go put some shoes on." And she literally drags me out of bed. And fortunately, it was a false alarm, but that's the only situation we've had with that. So yeah, college has been really good. I decided to do biochemistry. I hope to get involved with narcolepsy research and eventually going to medical school to do sleep medicine. So that's really neat. I loved seeing Project Sleep's Doctors with Narcolepsy series because I've always wondered, I know I can do great things, but could I go to medical school? Because that's tough. And seeing that all these other people can do it just really restored faith that, you know, I could do it too. So that was really powerful to see. And if you haven't seen it, I really recommend it. So actually this summer, I got to do an internship with Project Sleep. So if you guys aren't familiar, Julie might want to pop in and speak a little bit about this. But when we normally give these presentations to live audiences in person, at the end, we give a survey. And so we've got like 450 survey responses. So this summer, I spent going through all of those and organizing all the data. So I've got a few little bits of data that might be really cool to share. If you aren't familiar, two questions are on the survey are, before this presentation, you thought narcolepsy was. And you can select between a mental illness or result of mental illness, a neurological disorder, a temporary condition, a personality trait, a result of unhealthy lifestyle / habits, or not a real medical condition. And so you can see the before and after the presentations and see how the numbers have really gone in the right directions. And I think this is really powerful to see for the people who are presenting. These presentations actually do something and they actually get the right information out there and they actually have power. So it's really cool to see. When I saw this for the first time, I was blown away. I'm also blown away by the number of people that still think it's a mental illness, but we still got work to do. So that's good. Good. But it's really cool to see how much we've already done. So hopefully this is motivating. It was definitely motivating for me to see raising awareness. I'm really passionate, if you can't tell, about raising awareness. I'm one of the lucky ones that got diagnosed at a young age and within a relatively decent time frame. The majority of people got diagnosed about 8 to 15 years on average between symptoms and diagnosis. And so 6 years is pretty good, but I would love that number to be lowered. Even like 20 years isn't uncommon. My dad diagnoses a lot of people who are in their 70s and their 80s. And I really would love to see more people getting diagnosed sooner. And so, and even there's 50% of people currently diagnosed and misdiagnosed. So it's really interesting because like even my dad, as a physician and a sleep doctor, went several years not even noticing it right under his nose. We've had a conversation. I no ill will towards my dad. I just like to use him as an example to show how misinformed and uninformed even doctors are about this condition. So it's really important to raise awareness, to bring these numbers down and get more people diagnosed so they can potentially change their life for the better, and like I did and had that experience. So that's why I'm so passionate, and hopefully it helps.
Great job, Stephanie.
Thank you.
Are you facing sleep issues or a sleep disorder? Project Sleep is now excited to have the Sleep Helpline, a nonprofit-led free national helpline providing personalized support and resources. You can reach out today to speak with a compassionate resource specialist who will listen and help provide accurate sleep disorders information, resources to help navigate daily living and the healthcare landscape, and connect you with a certified sleep center and patient support organizations. Contact the Sleep Helpline at 1-800-819-2043 or by filling out a form on our website at project-sleep.com.
I just love how you talk about gaining confidence and feeling like you were like more like yourself. How has your journey, but you did mention when you first were diagnosed, you didn't want to go to school the next day because you didn't know how to explain it. So how did that journey go of explaining it to other people?
Definitely took baby steps. I started with my really close friends and they didn't understand it, but they also didn't treat me any differently for it. They weren't mean about it. If they had questions, they knew they could ask me. It was pretty good. They were supportive, but they weren't sure how to be supportive. But in middle school, I feel like that's pretty normal. I didn't have high expectations. As long as they weren't mean to me, I was okay. Baby steps for sure. I started telling my grandparents too, and they were really freaked out. They kind of thought as me at first, like it was comparable to like cancer or something. And they were like, oh no. So they definitely thought it was the end of the world. And I was like, I'm fine. It's just answers. We have answers now. And after a while, they saw that I was still me and they were like, oh, okay, it's not that big of a deal. So that definitely helped. And being able to see everybody at a conference who was so confident and open about it, that really inspired me to be more open about it. It still took a while. I remember when I started high school, I was very hush-hush about it. I would sneak to the bathroom to take my medicine because I didn't want anyone to see me, stuff like that. So it was definitely a journey, definitely opening up. The Youth Ambassador Program did help a lot because we had, for that, after we finished the training, we had to put out a press release in our local newspaper. And so once that went out, maybe a month later, a teacher stopped me in the hallway and said, hey, you're that girl from the newspaper. And I was like, yeah, I guess. And she said, you know, my son got diagnosed with narcolepsy because I read your paper and it sounded so much like him. And she was like, can I give you a hug? She started crying and it was really powerful and moving. And I was like, hey, I could actually do something with this. And being able to speak up and stuff, that could actually help others. So I should do it more often. So that gave me a lot of confidence to kind of speak up. All interactions have not been good. I did have a dance coach one time who, after practice ran an hour late, and I asked if I could go home because I had homework and I had to go to sleep. He just told me to take a caffeine pill. So that wasn't good. I ended up quitting that night. So yeah, not going to tolerate that. But that was, other than that, it's been really positive and everyone's been supportive. So
great. And for school accommodations for college, have you had to inform your professors, or does the disability office do that for you, or how does that go?
Yeah, the disabilities office does that for me, although I've asked them not to, just because it shouldn't it doesn't really interfere with me in the classroom too much. So we've kind of agreed on case-by-case basis. Yeah, that's just kind of what we've decided on. I'm not sure if that's better or worse than letting them know on the first day, but it's worked out so far, and we haven't had any problems.
That's good. Everyone has their own way, so it's good to just figure out what works for you. And I just wanted to ask you too about biochemistry. I mean, I'm just so impressed, and I love what you said about, you know, that you found your passion, and that's great. Like, to me, that just sounds so sleep-inducing and so challenging mentally. So I'm just so impressed by you. I don't know if I really have a question, but does that kind of stuff like wake you up, or is it still hard for you?
It's really interesting because it's a ton of math, especially right now. I'm in physics and quantitative chemistry, so it's all math. And once I kind of find that rhythm to math, I just kind of get going and it's just kind of smooth sailing pretty much. But it's definitely the more bio part of it, where it's like concepts and writing, and that's not for me. But I definitely schedule my time. So I work on one assignment and then I go do something else, take a walk, pet my cat, stuff like that, have a snack. And then I go and have another session where I do another assignment, and then maybe I'll take a nap. So definitely scheduling it out helps a lot.
Yeah, that's a great idea to break it up too. Okay, so we have a question from Jill. Hi, Jill. Thank you for watching. She says, do you get help from friends with college and routine you might have, for example, class times? Any sort of routine? I mean, I guess we just described your study routine, but do any friends help you with your schedule in college, or?
I'm very independent, but I could see that being helpful if, like, I needed to be woken up from a nap. I could tell my friend, like, hey, you mind, like, calling me till I answer at this time or whatever. But in regards to, like, schedules and class schedules in particular, I've found it best to, like, get work done in the morning. I'm far more productive in the morning than I am in the afternoon. So I try to schedule all of my classes between 8:30 and 12. And then I have lunch, take a nap, and then I have the rest of the day free to do homework or hang out with friends or sleep a little extra if I want to. So that's kind of how I do it. But what I would tell people is to figure out when you work best, and then schedule your classes around that. My brother has all nighttime classes. I don't know how he does it, but that's what works best for him. So that's kind of my advice. And also sticking to a schedule too, especially with taking sleep meds at night, sticking to a schedule can help a lot too.
Thank you so much for sharing about your project that you worked on this summer as a Project Sleep intern. Stephanie, how did you land the first internship, I think, ever with Project Sleep? How did that come about?
Well, I had an internship lined up at Brown University, working in one of their sleep research labs, but then COVID hit. And
why was I excited about you doing an internship at Brown? You remember? Brown.
Yeah. You were Brown, right? Through me.
I was hoping that you would send me cookies from Meeting Street Cookies.
Oh, yes. I've got that marked on Google Maps.
Mm-hmm. They have these amazing cookies at a place in Providence, Rhode Island. And so I was really hoping Stephanie was going go to this great internship and learn lots of great things and also send me cookies. And then her internship got canceled for this summer. And so we were, you know, thinking about, we gathered all this great data from these surveys over 4 years now of this program. And so I somehow convinced Stephanie to help us organize it. And, you know, it's interesting because it almost looks simple the way she just showed you graphs, but she's put a ton of work into organizing the information. And so hopefully it'll take a bunch more time probably, but we'll have something to publish eventually to share about all the great awareness that's being raised. The other cool graphic, I think, from my perspective, and I'm sure Stephanie agrees, tell them about what people think about the symptoms, about how it's like mostly like excessive daytime sleepiness is what they think of as narcolepsy.
Yeah, they think it's just you fall down. You fall asleep right away and then you fall down. And yeah,
it's really, cool.
Really interesting too, because in the survey, there are the fill in the free response questions. So I also analyzed those as well. And you could see like what people were most surprised by. So the majority of people by far were surprised to learn about cataplexy. And especially the symptoms in general, they were super surprised to learn about. They were also really surprised to learn about the link to diagnosis as well, which I think is a really unique part to this disorder. So, and I'm glad to see that that surprised them. They absolutely loved the personal story aspect of the presentations and how we give a patient perspective and how it's also informative as well at the same time.
Yay. It's been really cool working with you this summer on this project. And again, just can't wait for you guys to see all this exciting data, especially for those that are in the Rising Voices. I think it's very satisfying to see the difference that we're collectively making. And so my last question would be then, how did you find out about Rising Voices and get involved here?
Well, I actually met Julie. I actually met you first when I was in Colorado. I was so shy. I made my mom go up to talk to you because my mom got your book to understand kind of what I was going through. And she wanted you to sign it and she got you to sign it, but I was too shy because I was like, oh my God, it's Julie. It's Julie. So I've always been kind of aware of you. And then over the years, I'd heard about this program, but I was 16, 17, and I was like, oh, one more year, because you have to be 18 to do the program. So I'd been waiting. And then right before the application process opened up, I got to meet Julie in Los Angeles at it was like Narcolepsy Education Day or something in LA. So I went to that and I got to meet her and I was like, I really want to do your program. And she's like, okay, you could do it. So that's kind of
well-spoken. I remember you always being very well-spoken. And so I knew that you would be a great, great advocate for it.
Thank you.
And we're just so proud of you. And I love that you're passionate about going into the science field. Like, it's not my strength. I feel like I have to interact with doctors and even, you know, work on some publications and stuff, academic publications. And it really just not, it's not how my brain works. I'm a storyteller, but I'm just so grateful for young people like you that are both stepping forward to raise awareness and also working towards creating a brighter future through science and research. So we are cheering for you so big. We can't wait to hear all the great things and continue sharing all of your success and the difference that you continue to make. So,
thank you very much.
So with that, we have another question here. Steven wants to know, do you have any specific ideas which kind of narcolepsy research you want to pursue?
Well, nothing in particular yet. I definitely would be interested in seeing if there are any better treatment options. What we have now is pretty good, can't lie, but I feel like there's always room for improvement. My kind of thinking, I'm not sure if this is practical or not, is like how it's insulin for diabetes, but it could be like hypocretin for people with narcolepsy. I don't know. I think it's ahead of its time. We'll see. So that's kind of what I'm leaning towards. I've got a long way to get there though, so that could change.
Yeah. I also think, well, this isn't just my perspective, but as someone that you have narcolepsy without cataplexy, that this is a really big area now where a lot more research is being focused in understanding type 2 narcolepsy and idiopathic hypersomnia. And I'm so glad that's finally getting some attention, but you know, that could be something too, to better understand the different underlying causes of whatever the spectrum of narcolepsy looks like in the future.
Right. Oh, yeah. Yeah. That would be definitely interesting for sure.
Thank you again to Stephanie for sharing her story.
Thank you.
The Project Sleep Podcast is produced by Carver Sound Productions. For more information on podcast production services, visit carversoundproductions.com.